If you're visiting with us, we are looking through the book of Isaiah as chapter by chapter, and we've made it to chapter 10, and I was tempted with the Goulds visiting today to switch out of this message into something else, but after talking to my wife, we're like, just keep going. So we're just going to keep going message by message, and this is the message for today, and hopefully we can find the lesson for us through this sermon. Isaiah is a wonderful, wonderful book, as we have been finding, and really centers on two main themes, and that is of hope amidst calamity, judgment, and the future that Israel has with their Messiah. And we have seen a ton of good stuff already. And now as we get here into chapter 9 and 10 and so forth, we are seeing a lot of the judgments and the woes on different nations. But I want you to notice that in chapter 11 brings us more good news. There shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall grow out of his roots. And the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom and understanding, the Spirit of counsel and might, the Spirit of knowledge and of the fear of the Lord. And we know who that's talking about. And so in the midst of all these woes and judgments and all that was befalling the nations of Israel and Judah, and today we're going to look at Assyria, we continue to find hope. And today, friends, when the nation looks to crumble around us, our hope remains in Jesus Christ. And we have to remember that. Even as we see things happen around us that bother us and that cause us angst and perhaps leave us a little bit on the discouraged side, we must remember that this branch, and I can't wait to preach on this in a few weeks, this branch as compared to the end of chapter 10. We just wait. We run through these passages and we pick them out and we don't even realize the context. Just wait till you see chapter 11, verse 1, in relationship to chapter 10, verses 33 and 34. And you'll find hope and encouragement because God is still in control. And we're going to see that again today. We're going to talk about a subject that is something that affects all of us, but it's something that we don't want to readily admit, and that's the subject of pride. Pride. Pride is deceptive. Pride is consuming. And pride breeds more sin. The underlying condition of human sinful hearts is pride and selfishness. Pride tells us that we are better than God, and pride tells us that we know better than God. In the end, all that pride actually knows is a hard fall before God. And the example that we have in front of us today is of a nation of Assyria. And if you have your notes, and if you don't, there might be a few more back there. I printed extra copies, but if you need notes, do you need notes? Okay. Uh-oh, did I print the wrong thing?
Well, they're the same on both sides.
Uh-oh. Well, just use the first side and we'll help you with the second side. Sorry about that. I must have hit the wrong key when I printed. Oops. Sorry about that.
Not all of them.
Yeah, not all of them. I've had printing errors and jam-ups this week, and so I think that might have been where it went wrong. Some of you might have both sides. Some of you might not. Maybe you could go back there and check to see if those are the right ones that are still left. The truth that we want to see and on your notes is that pride is the catalyst to a person's destruction. And when a nation sees itself as the captain of its own fate, the fall of a nation will not be far behind. And it's usually led by individuals who come together as a country, and we can see that in our own country, who think that they know better than God. And what we're going to see is that in the life of the nation of Assyria. As we look at Assyria, and the title of the message is Assyria's Downfall, Assyria was a name during Isaiah's day that sparked fear in the listener. The name Assyria originates from Genesis chapter 10, verse 11, from the city of Asher on the western bank of the Tigris River in northern Mesopotamia. The firstborn of Shem was named Asher. That was where this, what would become to known as Assyria and the Assyrian Empire, really began. This firstborn of Shem, named Asher, was the founder of Nineveh. We all know Nineveh from the story of Jonah. Assyria was originally a colony of Babylon and eventually shook free from the control of their Babylonian masters. They were Semites but had mixed blood from the Sumerians. Assyria was a barbaric and cruel nation by this time in Isaiah's day. They lived for war and glorified in their military exploits and cruelty. They developed a highly advanced war machine and used naked terror as a means of conquest and as a method of holding their defeated enemies in abject fear and submission. The prominent god of the Assyrians was the sun god named Asher, spelled just a little bit differently than the originator of the name, or of Asher, the firstborn of Shem. Let me read just a little today about Assyria. Here's how Assyria and what they would do to their people when they defeated them. The conquered population was marched before the king, headed by their king or ruler. So the Assyrian king, when they conquered a land or a nation, would take that nation or that group of people, and they would march them before the king of Assyria, led by the king of the opposing nation that had been defeated. Most of the captives, young and old, would be then killed or burned alive as sacrifice to the national god of Assyria, Asher. Sometimes the captives would be flayed alive, blinded, or would have their heads impaled on sharp stakes. Those who were not massacred would be driven into captivity, sometimes with hooks in their noses. The city itself would be plundered and its accumulated wealth carried away into Assyria. Early in their history, the Assyrians were subject to the Babylonians. However, in time, they gained strength and carved out an empire, which by the time was Tiglath-Pileser, we call him TP here for short, TP, reached from the valley of the Tigris to the shores of the Mediterranean Sea. After the death of TP I, the Assyrians went into decline and were forced to defend their lands against the rebellious mountain tribes from the northeast and northwest. It was during this period that the kingdom of Israel under David and Solomon experienced its golden age of growth and prosperity. But later, during the 9th century BC under Ashurbanipal, the Assyrians resumed their forward sweep toward the west and south. Their great ambition was to create an empire which would include all the vast territories between the Gulf, the Persian Gulf, and the Nile Valley. Tiny Israel and Judah were caught in the middle between the Assyrian hammer and the Egyptian anvil. The prophetic books of Isaiah, Nahum, Micah, and Jeremiah reflect the situation. With the ascension of TP III, the Assyrian wars of conquest reached Samaria and Judah, aided by the short-sighted policy of Ahaz, who we've already talked about in chapter 7. And you remember Ahaz, who he was all concerned about Syria and Israel attacking him again for a second time. And Isaiah said, it's not going to happen. He brought his firstborn son with him as a promise. And he said, I'm going to offer you a sign. And King Ahaz, meanwhile, had been making a league with Assyria at this point. He said, no, I don't want a sign. But God gave, through Isaiah, a sign to Ahaz anyway. And that sign was the sign of Emmanuel. Chapter 7, verse 14. Isaiah, whose life was spent in the ominous shadow of the Assyrian menace, had an intimate and accurate knowledge of their overwhelming arrogance and unspeakable cruelty. His messages reflect the insight of a first-hand observer, and I think we need to remember that what Isaiah saw and wrote about was something he knew well. So when he writes today about the verses we look at in Assyria, Isaiah knew Assyria. It is quite possible that the prophet saw multitudes of panic-stricken refugees fleeing from their plundered and burned villages and towns as they sought shelter in Jerusalem, and he may have received from them firsthand reports, because Assyria would overrun Israel and make it to the doorstep of Jerusalem and Judah in the south. Even surpassing Isaiah's intimate knowledge of the Assyrians was his amazing foreknowledge of the doom which the Lord had in store for this overwhelming and blasphemous people, which was so intoxicated with its own strength, respected neither God nor man. Isaiah predicted Assyria's downfall, and that was fulfilled in 612 BC when the combined force of the Babylonians, the Medes, and the Scythians captured Nineveh, the capital of Assyria. After that, Nineveh became a desolate ruin and a pasture for flocks, just as Isaiah the prophet prophesied. The prophet Nahum, a contemporary of Isaiah, left a striking description of the Assyrian lust for blood, and he predicted the destruction of their capital. Listen to Nahum chapter 2 and chapter 3. The lion did tear in pieces enough for his whelps and strangled for his lioness. He filled his holes with prey and his dens with raven. Behold, I am against thee, saith the Lord of hosts. Woe to the bloody city, it is full of lies and robbery. The prey departeth not. And it shall come to pass that all they that look upon thee shall flee and say, Nineveh is laid waste. Who shall cry for her? First of all, what I want you to see in your notes today is the reckoning by Assyria. Chapter 10, verses 5 and 6, there's a reckoning by Assyria. O Assyrian, the rod of mine anger and the staff in the hand is mine indignation. I will send him against a hypocritical nation and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge to take the spoil and to take the prey and to tread them down like the mire or the mud of the streets. Isaiah now turns his sights to Assyria, and he's talking how God, who is speaking in these verses, takes Assyria as his own rod of judgment upon his very own people. Let that sink in for just a moment. I just read about a nation that didn't sound very kind, that did horrible things to the people that it crushed. Yet God is going to use Assyria as a rod of his anger on his very own people. Now you might say, why would God use a nation that is so bad and so wicked and so mean and so cruel to do this to his own people? Well, you've missed the whole other sermons as we have looked at all the sins of the people of the nation of Israel, led by pride, and how they treated the poor, and how they stole, and how their leadership mocked God. And God said, that's enough. And he calls Assyria to come from the north and to take Israel into judgment. They had blatantly, that is Israel, had blatantly disregarded the covenant law that had been set forth back earlier in the Bible and in the Old Testament. God had clearly warned that the northern kingdom would experience this judgment, and it would come now, as we see in these verses, from the ruthless Assyrians. For Assyria was God's rod of anger. And so God would allow these cruel and hateful people to do damage both to the land that was promised to Israel and to the very people that he once called his people whom he loved. God is no respecter of persons, though. God's own people disobeyed the revealed law that was given to them at Mount Sinai and repeated throughout the prophets as God's own messengers. And God now chose to use this godless nation to carry out this punishment. The cold-blooded and callous enemy that Assyria was would make a devastating mark on the land of Israel. In fact, God's judgment would leave a permanent mark in history, because Israel, as we see in verse 6, Israel was now called a hypocritical nation. Against the people of my wrath, I will bring this rod of anger. That's a far cry from what we saw in chapter 5, is it not? Chapter 5, where we saw God promise to the nation, or God say he was going to raise up a nation in this parable of the vineyard. He sings this song, this song of a beloved song to his beloved people. And he says, I've made a fruitful vineyard. I've raised up the towers and I've planted the choicest vines and the wine press is full of good grapes. But then what happened? The vineyard got overrun by briars and thorns. All that God wanted to do for his nation, he couldn't do anything else. There's nothing more he could do for the nation. He had given them everything. And yet, his only choice was to lay it to waste, chapter 5, verse 6 says. Chapter 5, verse 6 says, it can't be pruned, it can't be dug up, there's briars and there's thorns, the clouds will not rain any more rain upon it, because the people have not obeyed me. And you know what the root issue for the children of Israel and the northern kingdom was? Pride. The same issue that we'll find that the Assyrians had. Back to chapter 10. Let me tell you, though, the Assyrians will not get off scot-free. Just because God uses them as his rod of judgment, they too, as we're about to see, will also be judged because they fail to give God the credit for their victory. And you might say, well, wait a second. Israel, we can understand Israel. They knew. They had the law. They should have obeyed God. They had no excuses. But Assyria, we got to give them a little bit of a pass here. Assyria, they didn't have the revealed law of God. They didn't have, you know, some of the things, all those things that Israel had. They weren't the vineyard, the choice vineyard that God chose. So why would Assyria also be judged? And that's a legitimate question, because what we're going to see in this chapter is Assyria fall. Turn to Romans chapter 2, because Romans chapter 2 gives us the answer as to why Assyria would also be judged. It is true, Assyria did not have the Mosaic law and the revealed law of God. But that does not mean they were without excuse. And it's a reminder to us today that there is nobody around this world who's going to say at the end of the day, I have an excuse that I did not know there was a Creator God. They may not have every verse, and they may not even have a Bible in their language, but one cannot help but look around and see the mountain known as Mount Baker, or in their land, whatever creation is in front of them, and say, there is no God. Because at the end of the day, they will have to say, someone created that mountain. Someone created that hill and that valley where we live. Romans chapter 2 and verse 11 says, there is no respect of persons with God, for as many as have sinned without law shall also perish without law. And as many as have sinned in the law shall be judged by the law. For not the hearers of the law are just before God, but the doers of the law shall be justified. For when the Gentiles, think Assyrians, who do not have the law, but they do by nature the things contained in the law, these having not the law, or a law unto themselves. You might say, well, that's a lot of words that are going this way and that way, and that's hard for me to understand. And in my small brain, that's hard for me to understand as well. Let me try to explain it. The judgment for the Gentiles, for the Assyrians, would not be on the basis of the Mosaic law, but on the basis of their own actions, conscience, and thoughts. Let me quote from you from a commentary. Such persons show that the law is not to be found only on tablets of stone and included in the writings of Moses. It is also inscribed in their hearts and is reflected in their actions, conscience, and thoughts. The law given to Israel is in reality only a specific statement of God's moral and spiritual requirements for everyone. Moral Gentiles, by their actions, show that the requirements of the law are written in their hearts. It is confirmed by their consciences. the faculty within human beings that evaluate their actions, along with their thoughts that either accuse or excuse them of sin. This is why Paul called such Gentiles a law for themselves. Unquote. All that is to say is every single person God has set in their hearts to know right from wrong. They may not have all the specific details like the law and all, but everybody knows that it is wrong. If I came up to my good friend Joe here today and I decided that I wanted to steal his wallet, and I'm not going to steal your wallet, but if I stole his wallet, even if I didn't have the law, he would know that it was wrong, that I took something that was not mine. There would be conviction on my conscience. And so the Assyrians, even though they did not have the law, still were guilty of their sin of pride. But you and I, who have God's word, let me just tell you, you for sure have no excuse. Let's go back to Isaiah. Because what was going on, and this is in your notes under point one, Assyria was now accomplishing God's will. I know it's hard to believe because they were so wicked. They came under his divine will and plan. And it's of course they chose to act though this way. And they did this out of their own choice. But they could not have done this without the approval of God. And you say, well, God is forcing them to sin. No, I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is God, by the way, if God used any people in judgment, he would use a sinner. So it could be the Assyrians who were horrible sinners. Well, maybe it was a good sinner. You know, maybe he judges Israel by a group of good sinners. It wouldn't matter who God used, they'd still have been sinners. We are the ones that put on Assyria the fact that they are ruthless. And I'm not discounting that they were horrible and barbaric and bad. But if God had chosen to use me to judge Israel, I'm just as wicked in God's eyes as that Assyrian. The problem is, in our eyes, we have this kind of this list that says, oh, I'm a little bit better sinner than Hitler. Yeah, we hear this all the time. And we compare ourselves to Hitler. And I've told you often, quit comparing yourself to some other sinner and compare yourself to God. And then you'll find out how wicked of a sinner you are. Even Isaiah did that in Isaiah chapter 6. And in Isaiah chapter 6, as you all know, he saw himself as a man of unclean lips. So God was using Assyria because God chose to use Assyria. And as God sovereignly desired, he used this wicked nation to be the club of his anger. Judgment would come to Israel, but woe to those who delivered the judgment. And that's what we find here today. So God sent this inhumane nation against his people, verse 6. God calls Israel, listen to this, the word hypocritical in verse 6, God calls them, this is what this word hypocritical means in the Hebrew, godless, profane, and irreligious. That's what he called Israel. Godless, profane, and irreligious. That's his own people. That's how bad they had fallen. Number two, moving on to verses 7 through 14, we find that not only do we see that God uses Assyria in his reckoning on his own people, Israel, and ultimately they make it to the doorstep of the southern kingdom and Jerusalem, but they don't quite defeat Judah. We find, number two, the reasons that now Assyria is going to be reckoned by God himself. Assyria will be judged. First of all, we find that the first reason that Assyria is going to be judged by God, even though God is using them as his instrument of judgment on his own people, the first reason is they refuse to admit that God was behind their conquests. Look at verses 7 through 11. Howbeit he meaneth not so, and he's talking about Assyria. Neither does his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off the nations, and not just a few of them. For he saith, are not my princes altogether kings? Is not Calno as Carchemish, and Hamath as Arpad, and Samaria as Damascus? And I'll explain all this in just a minute. As my hand hath found the kingdoms of the idols, and whose graven images did excel them of Jerusalem and of Samaria, shall I not, as I have done unto Samaria and her idols, so do to Jerusalem and her idols? Wherefore it shall come to pass that when the Lord hath performed his whole work upon Mount Zion and on Jerusalem, I will punish the fruit of the stout heart of the king of Assyria and the glory of his high looks. What was Assyria thinking they were? What we have here in these next few verses is the description by Isaiah of what Assyria's mind was all about. Here we find out that Assyria was thinking, listen to me, they were better than God. They were above God. Just like the opening line of the illustration to start with, it's no different in our lives. When pride seeps into our lives, we think we've got it under control. We know what God doesn't really know. We got it. We know better than God. That's what Assyria was saying. There was more to it than that. But that's essentially what Isaiah is saying. In your notes under point 2A, the bottom line was that Assyria and all the nations should have known they were but instruments in God's divine hands. You say, well, how would they know? Did they have a commission from God? Did Assyria know specifically? Like, did God reveal that to them? I don't know. And I have no reason to believe that he did. But they should have known that God was behind their conquests. But you know what they attributed it to? Their gods. Their gods. They weren't godly. They may have not been even known they were being used by God, but they discounted the greatness of Israel's God by assuming that Israel was like any other nation, and they were blinded by their own bloodthirstiness. Look at these verses. And in verse 7, if I were to summarize what that verse really says, here's what it says. This is not what he intends. This is not what he has in mind. This is talking about Assyria. His purposes and his only reasons for being around is to destroy nations. That's what Assyria was thinking. That was what was in their mind. This is what they intend to do. What am I saying? I'm saying that they didn't give God the credit that he was behind this. No, they said it was us. We're all about overrunning as many nations as we can. That's all we're in it for. We're in it for as much worldwide domination as possible. That's what he's saying. And he goes on and he gives the illustration in verses 8 and 9. He said, are not my princes altogether kings? This was the Assyrian thinking. They thought all their commanders and their princes and their leaders, they were all kings, they were all rulers, and that's all they wanted to do was dominate the scene of the day. We know by history, as we look back at these empires, you know this. We've talked about this with the Roman Empire in men's Bible study, right? The emperor thought himself to be what? Lord. The Roman emperor. Caesar. And if you said Jesus Christ is Lord, your head was in danger in the first century. That pattern's repeated through all these empires. The Egyptian Empire, we know by Exodus, the Pharaoh was considered deity and his son. And you know why God sent those plagues. He sent those plagues on those false gods to show that he was greater than any of their gods. But you know what? It took one big plague, did it not? It took one final plague. And I'll tell you what, hail and darkness, Numbers 8 and 9, were horrible. You read 8 and 9. Frogs, nothing compared to hail and darkness. But it took one last one. And you know what God said? I'm going to show you just exactly how much God-like you think you are. And he killed the Pharaoh's firstborn son, who was deity, considered deity, because he was next in line. Oh, it's one thing to send frogs on the people. It was one thing to send lice or whatever else, gnats or blood in the river turned into blood and all of that. And darkness where you couldn't see in front of your face, and it went on for a few days. It was another thing to specifically hammer home on the human person who The Pharaoh thought was next God in line. That was repeated through all these empires, friends. The leadership thought they were God or above God. Let me read you a quote. This comes from an Assyrian record book. Okay? I had to do some digging to find this. This was the son of Sennacherib, King Esarhaddon. You never heard of him, and neither had I until I did this digging. Here's what he said about himself. Listen, quote, "I am powerful. I am all powerful. I am a hero. I am gigantic. I am colossal. I am honored. I am magnified. I am without an equal among all kings. I am the chosen one of Asher," that's the god, "Nebu, Marduk, called by Sin, favorite of Anu, beloved by the queen, Ishtar, goddess of all, the unrelenting weapon which utterly destroy the enemy's land," and the last two words, "am I," unquote. If you don't get what I'm saying, you need to get that quote and reread it, because that's what the Assyrians thought of themselves. The Assyrians elevated, therefore, their leaders to places of deity. And they defied Jehovah even as they were being used by Jehovah. The leaders place themselves equal or above God, and when a person or nation does that, it will lead to a cruel and painful fall every single time. Friends, no different for you and I. No different for us. When we elevate ourselves to a place of pride, it will only cause us to fall that much further. Verse 9, there's a few names mentioned, and all these names here are just places that Assyria overcame. These were swift conquests by Assyria, and you'll notice at the end of verse 9, it's Samaria. That's the capital of Israel. The only problem was, when this was written, Israel had not been overrun yet. Isaiah wrote this knowing Samaria was going to be overrun. Verse 10 and 11. Isaiah now gives the bottom line about the Assyrians. He says that they believed, get this, Israel would be the easiest prey they've ever had. Look at verse 10. "As many have found the kingdoms of the idols, and whose graven images did excel them of Jerusalem and of Samaria, shall I not, as I've done unto Samaria and her idols, so I will do to Jerusalem and her idols." What's being said here? Isaiah says, Assyria has overrun all these other nations that had all these false gods. And one would think, right, friends, that Israel would have a stronger God than all those other nations they'd overrun. But you know what Assyria saw? This is frightening. You know what Assyria saw? A nation just like all the others. Because that's how they were acting. Because that's how they were living. They now saw a nation whose God was not the Lord. Whose God was no longer Jehovah. Whose gods had taken over for the one true God. And when Assyria came knocking, they said, we'll run this one right over. Because it's no different than any others that we've run right over. And that's exactly what happened. So Assyria placed God. Listen, Assyria took God and placed what should have been God of Israel, the true God, and looked at Israel and said, they're just like the false gods, the nations of the false gods. This shows how far Israel had fallen from God. So much that their enemies mocked their power, because now Israel was powerless. Had not God worked for Israel in the past, friends? When we go back to Egypt and the Canaanites and the Philistines and other nations, as they came into the promised land, as they left Egypt, had not they seen God work wonders as over all other gods, and now all that was left of Israel was just like other nations. To Assyria at this point, all the gods were idols and graven images. Assyria thought they and their gods were now stronger than anybody else's gods. So we'll just overrun them. Do you know what? If Israel, listen today, if Israel had stuck it out with the true God, Assyria would never have been able to overrun them. But that's not what happened. Sake of time, I'm not going to read Psalm 115, but it is application for us today. Psalm 115, verse 1, not unto us, but unto you, God, get all the glory. I'm paraphrasing, and then the psalmist goes on to talk about idols. You know idols who have hands but can't do anything with them? Who have ears but can't hear? Who have eyes but can't see? And the makers are as dumb as those idols, God says in Psalm 115. Aren't you glad we have a God that hears us? That we can serve who sees us? Aren't you glad we have a God who has acted on our behalf by sending his son? Give up the idols, friends. Give up the idols. Number two, Assyria's pride got the best of them. Verses 12 through 14. And we can see God says, "Will come to pass that the Lord will have performed his whole work upon Mount Zion and Jerusalem. He is then going to punish Assyria because of their stout heart." Now we think of stout as something, I guess, strong and big. It is the opposite of my 4x4 post that was holding up my mailbox until 1:30 yesterday morning. Yes, I have a treated 4x4 post in the ground that held my mailbox. And don't try anything crazy around my house. I got a security camera set up, and I noticed my mailbox was knocked down yesterday, or when I got up yesterday morning. So I went back and reviewed all my videos, and I saw three guys running down my street at 128 Saturday morning. And the second guy comes along, and he takes his hand, whether he did it on purpose, I don't know, and he just knocks my mailbox over. Okay, maybe my post wasn't as stout as I thought it was. That 4x4 should have stayed, but it's a little bit rotten on the bottom, so it went over. But a normal treated 4x4, if I brought that in here today, that's a stout board. That is not what this word means. The word stout here means proud, great, majestic. God says, I'm going to punish Assyria because they're proud, because they are glory in their own self. These are words of pride and arrogance, and they were indicative of man's wicked attempts to magnify himself against God. And it would be this very arrogance that said, Assyria said, I'm doing this. It's all about me and my conquest. That's how Assyria came about it. God would say, nope, your fall is coming. Your fall is coming. So he will punish the stout heart of the king of Assyria, the proud heart, and he will punish the glory of his high looks. We know what high looks means. Verse 13, for he saith, by the strength of my hand I have done it. By my wisdom I am prudent. I have removed the bounds of the people and have robbed their treasures. I have put down the inhabitants like a valiant man. And my hand which found a nest of riches of the people and one that gathereth eggs that are left, I have gathered all the earth. And there was none that moved the wing or opened the mouth or chirped. Pastor Randy, what's going on here? It's easy. When you read these two verses, all you see is this is a description of the Assyrian saying, it's my strength. The Assyrian said, I'm the one that's wise. The Assyrian said, it's all about me. I am the one that have robbed and taken the treasures. No, not one time do you see the Assyrian say, God has done this. You say, well, Pastor Randy, they were full of false gods. But in the end, at the end of the day, they should have known. It is my hand, they say. It is me, the kings and the leadership, who have found the nest of the riches of the people. And that is, they went in and they would conquer the people. And the thing that they wanted the most was not the people, it was the riches. And they went into the nest. You know, one time my brother decided he wanted to look in a nest, a bird's nest at home. That I don't remember if my grandpa had built a little box and we had nailed it to the tree at home. And you could look in the little hole, and there were some eggs in that nest. Well, if my brother were here today, he would tell you, I think it's the only time he ever broke his wrist. Because he fell when he was trying to look inside at those eggs that were about ready to hatch. The picture is of my brother going in and grabbing those eggs, those valuable things to that bird, that mother bird. That's the picture here. The picture is the nation of Assyria. Everywhere they went, they grabbed the riches and they just swoop them up. And the bird could do absolutely nothing. In fact, you'll notice the end, the bird didn't even have a chance to chirp. That's how fast the Assyrians did this. And all they said was, it's about me. It's all that I've done. Their pride was demonstrated in their military successes, but it was a stench in God's nostrils. So who did give them their strength? Who did give them their intelligence? Who did give them their wisdom? Instead of attributing all their advances to themselves, they should have recognized that their wisdom and their strength came from God himself, but they took it as their own. Friends, do you ever do that? Do you ever do this? Do you ever say, I do all this? You know what, Perry Pallet? I did it for 21 years. I knew how to flip pallets. I knew how to cut lumber. Now I found that Seifu has cut way more boards than I've ever cut. But I cut 19, 20,000 packages on the package saw. I did a lot of forklift driving in my day. Then I met the other day, I met a guy who works at Bellingham Cold Storage and he's been there 43 years. Okay. Wow. But I can think I've done all this. But at the end of the day, any wisdom, any strength, any ability, any capability is God. It's because of the Lord. And any money that I've earned is his too. In fact, everything is the Lord's, Psalm 24:1 says. The earth is the Lord's. Who are we to say that we've done anything, friends? Who are we to say that we've been able to pull off this and that? And some of you, we've got some amazing people here, and I know I'm almost done. We've got some people. My friend Joe was an engineer for many years in San Francisco, and we've got lots of people who have done some amazing things here. We've even got some pastors here. Do you know what? Every sermon that's ever been preached, every word that's ever been spoken is because of the Lord. And we got to recognize that. The moment we don't, we're no different than the Assyrians. Well, last few verses, the promise of Assyrians' reckoning. Verse 15, shall the axe boast itself against all him that heweth? Or shall the saw magnify itself against him that useth it? Is the rod shall shake itself against them that lift it up? Or the staff shall lift itself up as if it were no wood? What is Isaiah saying? He responds to the Assyrian pride with some rhetorical questions. And what he says is, as he exposes the pride of Assyria, and he demonstrates that Assyria, here it is, were just tools in the toolbox of God. That's all they were. They're just the toolboxes, or tools into God's toolbox. By the way, so are you, and so am I. Is it the saw that does the work? I saw a saw back here. Should have brought that thing up here. Is it the saw? If I just set it up here, is that saw doing any work? No, it's the person that moves the saw is going to be the one that's doing the work. These are the rhetoric questions. Is the axe in and of itself be able to boast? No, it's the person that does it. And God says, Assyria cannot boast because they're tools in my toolbox. And it's worthless without an operator. Instead of gods, as Assyria thought, this was about God. Same with us. And even though Assyria had been used by God, in the end, they were not above God. For us, we are but instruments for the master's use. While we clearly have desires and goals and must work, it is ultimately our sovereign God who is in control over this entire universe, including every moment of our lives. Well, let me just read these last few verses. Therefore shall the Lord of hosts, send among his fat ones leanness, and under his glory he shall kindle a burning like the burning of a fire. This is a description of what's going to happen to Assyria. The light of Israel shall be for a fire, and his holy one a flame, and it shall burn and devour the thorns and the briars in one day, and shall consume the glory of his forest and his fruitful field, both soul and body, and they shall be as when a standard bearer fainteth, and the rest of the trees of his forest shall be a few that a child will be able to count them. All that's going to be left is basically nothing, so much that a little child could count what's left. judgment will happen. God will take care of this. And in the end, you know who's going to get the glory? God. How does Isaiah chapter 10, verses 5 through 19, how could the downfall of Assyria apply to you sitting here in 2020? Well, hopefully I've made a little bit of sense about how it could. Here's a couple things that I wrote down. And if you do have page 2, it's on the end of the bottom of the notes. Let me tell you, and I'm going to repeat this, and you'll hear it a few other times throughout the book of Isaiah, a person will never win against God no matter how strong, smart, or capable he or she believes that he can be. Never going to win. Oh, you might think you'll win for a spell, but ultimately, God will have the last say. Number 2, God's control over mankind is clearly seen in the moving of Assyria, both to judge and in being judged. God's in control. And when we think about our own country, when we think about where we sit today, it's the same for our country. What does the passage reveal about the character and nature of God? Well, it's the themes of God's justice and the themes of God's sovereignty and the themes of God's judgment. If you have your bulletin today, as I close, I want you to take a look at the 3 meditation verses that I wrote at the bottom of the service order. And instead of singing today, I thought it would be good just to be reminded about what God says about pride and what God says about humility. And you might ask yourself, is there an area of pride in your life right now that needs to be dealt with?